this conversation with Amanda stayed with me for a different reason. It's not a dramatic story. It's a quiet, steady one about what happens when money and safety collide and how women rebuild stability from the ground up. We talked about confidence, pricing, and risk. But underneath it all was something deeper. The quiet freedom that comes from not worrying about money all the time. As you listen, I invite you to think about what hands on the wheel means in your own money life. The small, steady actions that help you stay grounded and in control. Welcome to Life's Riches. I'm Aisha, a money coach and educator, exploring what richness really means beyond numbers. In today's episode, I'm joined by fellow finance coach, Amanda. We talk about stability, confidence, and how women can take their hands off autopilot when it comes to money, from pricing with courage to building lasting security. Let's get started. Thank you, Amanda, for joining me today. I'm so excited about our conversation. So let's keep it simple, and if you can tell us a bit about who you are.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much for the invite to speak. I really appreciate it. We've known each other a while and the passion for helping people with money is definitely there. So it's great to be here in this space with you today. So I'm Amanda Edwards. I am a financial coach. I'm also a business mentor and I've been an accountant for 30 years, but that kind of probably shows my age. And I've been well into the numbers and money mindset and things like that. And as well as that, I'm also a daughter, a sister, a wife, a mother to three children. So I'm also a human existing in the world that makes, you know, unfortunately, money still makes the world go round. So very much a person in the world as well.
It does. Thank you. Thank you for that introduction. We agreed on two prompts, and the prompts are what shaped the way you approach money, both personally and professionally, and the other one was what feels most important to you when it comes to helping others with money. And as I explained to you, we'll start wherever you want to start, and we follow the prompts and wherever the conversation goes. So yeah. Over to you.
I think it was really great to get those kind of nudges in the direction. And it did make me think for a moment, you know, really what was that core starting for me as well on mm-hmm. the kind of money journey and what really did kind of focus me in my kind of journey with money in my life. And I mm-hmm. think really for me, the ignition point was when my father passed away. So unfortunately, I lost my father to a car accident when I was mm-hmm. 11, leaving behind my mum and myself and my two sisters. And mm-hmm. that was really a huge event, you know, that there was a lot of difficulty. My dad was the main income earner. It was in the 80s. So it was also, they were of a generation, a couple that my dad was very much, don't worry your pretty little head about it. And so my mum really had no information, no knowledge. She was incredibly lost. People took advantage. And she really struggled, leading her a few years later really to go into a very deep depression, feeling mm-hmm. like she had failed in her life and her three daughters. Really difficult. And I think so at that very young, impressionable age, I realized that money could be a difficult thing, you know, and it mm-hmm. can really make you feel incredibly vulnerable, incredibly insecure.
As Amanda described her experience and how it felt, I remember thinking about how many of us have seen our mothers struggle quietly with money, believing that security was something they had to endure rather than design.
And we had to go to zero. I'm going to say actually we went to minus, you know, we went past zero as a starting point. And so that really shaped my view. My view also of how women exist in the world with money. Because really I'm a money coach for women. That's really where my passion lies. Although I'll talk to anybody like you, I'll talk to anybody about money. But realizing there was this instability and vulnerability. And so it worries me for people. I'm a natural born worrier and it worries me for people. And I found my way through really reading, listening, learning, talking to people. And I wanted to be able to share that life experience, that lived journey, and to be able to help people change their circumstances as well.
Thank you for sharing that. That couldn't have been an easy time.
No.
And you did say that was the main thing that impacted how you saw money. Can you shed a bit more light on that and how it actually impacted? What were the things that you took from that situation and how that has affected how you live your life today?
Yeah, I think understanding that money can be taken away very quickly, like circumstances can change. You know, we were kind of living very well, economically safe. Mm-hmm. Everything was going forward. And then very quickly that shifted. And realizing that actually in the adult world, you know, being an adult now in it, you know, one bad thing, maybe you could go over. Two, three bad things becomes really difficult. Mm. And so, you know, my mum had to deal with a kind of a lot of things going wrong. And I think fundamentally their stability and financial security was in the making and wasn't really that stable. Mm. So I think what I learned was that there is this foundation that you can start with. You can build up the security. And that without it, you can hit rock bottom very, very quickly. So my mindset and my work with people is to create that financial stability and security. That's really what I teach as a mentor. And that's what I try to help people find a way towards in their own way as a coach. Because those things really change decisions that you can make and directions of your life. And that when things are difficult, you can make decisions from really bad places. You are forced into corners with decisions, so it limits you. So it's that. I really learned the hard way, unfortunately, by seeing it, you know, my mom experiencing it and us living it. I really saw the power of money. And I say now even, money is a problem until it isn't. You know, you know, when everything is good, it isn't a problem anymore. And you can, you know, go forward. But while it's a problem, it is a big problem. And you need to face it and take certain actions towards fixing it.
Thank you. The incident that happened with your family was in the 80s, which is decades ago. But do you still find a lot of women who are not engaged with their money? Maybe because a spouse or someone else, or maybe they even have a financial advisor or something, but, you know, they're just not engaging with what's going on. Do you still find women like that now?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So I do. I mean, when I started financial coaching, which was about 8-9 years ago, after I had kind of been an accountant for many years, but this calling for me, it was really calling me, like, go and speak to people, you know, find people's security. So when I kind of went that way, I was thinking, okay, it's a different time. Of course, I'm going to find women with a different mindset. You know, I'm not going to find any kind of people who are like my mum. And there are a lot of women who are in the position that my mum was even today. It's not a small number either. And it happens for different reasons. So I want to say that everything is... sometimes not because we've got a lot going against us women, because we have a history of not having a seat at the table about money. So, you know, there was a time not that long ago where when a female inherited money, the village was, how do we marry her quickly to take care of that money because she's not capable? And that wasn't very far away, that kind of let's marry her off, you know, if she's the only person inheriting. So this manipulation of money to women, and that somehow this, that, you know, women aren't good with money has stayed and stayed. So there is in the mindset that, oh, I'm not very good with money, or a mindset of, you know, women are spenders, which of course, women run households And if there's dependents, children involved, there's a lot of spending. We all know, if you've got kids, there's lots of spending. And if women are buying the clothes, the school items, the food, the things that are needed in the house, then you will look like you're spending. But those are things that have to be spent also. So there's the questions of wants and needs. Women tend to really spend money on the things that they need, to make sure that's there. So again, that's another mindset as well. And, there's other penalties against us. There's a motherhood penalty in the sense of not only a financial penalty, but the weight of work and its free work is burdened to the women. So sometimes when I'm doing workshops and coaching with women, I'm like, okay, you have to get a seat at your money table and you have to start having money conversations and you're going to have to get into the long-term planning. And I can't tell you how many women I've seen kind of like roll their eyes or like, another thing, Amanda, come on. I'm doing so much already. But having to say it's really, really important, because women, when we get divorced, if there is the main income earner, if there is a death, call them the terrible D's, divorce, death, dementia also. Women can really drop into poverty and huge, vast amounts of vulnerability if they don't know what's going on. So I kind of go, I know you're really busy and you don't have to do all the work, but you have to know what's going on. Knowledge is, key, key. So yeah, I am finding women still in the position of my mum. Yes.
And that's interesting you say that. But so when you say women in the same position as your mom, would that be older women, or does it span across all ages?
It is kind of all ages. A bank, UBS, did a report, I think it was at the end of 2023, where they asked women who does, day-to-day accounting and who does long-term financial planning so that they could understand. And I think the number was like 80% of women are opting out of long-term strategic financial planning. And that report was going, so you were married, but that was going from like 25 plus all the way to kind of 50. So I feel that what happens is, women, when they are single and taking care of themselves, have the time and mental load to be able to take care of this. But the minute that they go into partnerships and they go into any kind of caregiving, that caregiving takes priority over financial planning. And even though they can do the day-to-day, the long-term planning takes a back seat. And so a lot of this is going, it's just as important to keep that going, as when you're very busy, you still have to watch everything you eat and, to make sure that you are eating well or you're sleeping well. You also have to make sure that your financial house is also in order, even with all that going on. But I think that is financial education. I think that's what a lot of us coaches out there are doing and helping to support do, have those really important conversations with yourself and with other people.
I agree with you, and it's interesting because, as you know, I work a lot with young adults, and I do work with women as well, but my passion lies with young adults. And I have a few young ladies who are, for their age, in good positions, holding down good roles, and being paid well. And as much as they're spending, they're also saving. But then they're not really engaging with what needs to be done with the money. They're like, okay, yeah, I'll save. Yeah, I'll buy a house. Yeah, I'll invest. But it's like, okay, somebody else can do all of that. And I'm saying, you need to know. You need to understand. You can't rely on someone, So it's such an interesting thing. And then you have the women who are in midlife. And in the UK, there are a lot of midlife women who are single. The children have now flown the nest. Like you were saying, while the children were home, the focus was on raising the kids, you know, caregiving and all of that. And now they're at the stage where they're able to focus. And that, just to buffer the point you were making about, once the caregiving is out of the way, they're more able to focus on things.
Yeah.
You know, so now the interest is, okay, what are, I'm behind, but what do I do?
So that women may become also then the caregivers of their parents if they're still alive. And so sometimes that window of engagement is very small between their children leaving and their parents needing them. Yeah, I kind of do say it's got to be a forever thing. Thanks. It can't be a, oh, this, you know, it's just as important. Mm-hmm. But also, I think I want to speak about, you know, women and that long-term engagement. One thing that I do hear very, very often from women is that I'm very risk averse. Mm-hmm. You know, my husband or my partner or my brother or my, you know, my male friends, they're more happy to take risks, you know, and there's a couple of things that we have to confront about that risk averse. Mm-hmm. So one is that in the mindset, so there is kind of a known about children going up that boys are encouraged to get dirty and girls are encouraged to stay neat and clean because of their outfit. Yeah. So to all future mothers out there, I wish you to do what I do, which is that I just put my kids in shorts and jeans and said, get dirty. Okay. Yeah. So that they could learn to have the same kind of view of get stuck in. Okay. We want much more girls in the world that are ready to get stuck in. The second thing is that they say, okay, I'm risk averse. Okay. The stock market and investment isn't casino gambling. It isn't. Okay. Mm. There is strategic thinking and thoughts, and there is risk level that you can deal with. So there is moderate risk, high risk, but it's a decision that you have to make, and it can be looked at in a side by side with your financial situation. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I want to say to women about risk averse is, if you put all your money under the bed or in a safe place, it will devalue just by inflation alone. And so risk, the riskiest thing you can do as an individual, male or female, is nothing with your money. So nothing with your money, nothing with your savings is the riskiest thing you can do. Now, a lot of people have never heard that before. They've never been confronted with that thought. Oh my gosh, you mean me being safe is actually the worst thing I can do? And it is. And that is the truth. You have to get in the game, but you don't have to go to a casino. So, yeah, I think that has to be talked about.
It does. It does. And I suppose it's about getting the right balance. Everybody has a certain risk level, like you alluded to. But then, rather than keeping all your money in the savings account or under the bed, or, you know, you've got to get in the game, like Amanda's just said, and, you know, consider your risk level and with the right balance. And I want to ask you, you know, because you mentioned gambling, I had a question recently in a school I had, you know, been to work with, you know, with a few young adults there. And they asked me, would I consider gambling investment? So what's your take on that?
I think that comes down to a question of risk tolerance. Mm-hmm. So if you have all your savings, all your financial objectives met, you are financially stable, secure, you have your house, your food on the table and everything else, and you get to a level where you can do whatever you want with a certain amount of money, you can go and gamble. I wouldn't call it an investment. I would call it a huge risk. But you can do that if everything is in line. It is very, very risky if your food on the table or your home above your head is being gambled. And that's why, you know, there are issues with people who are, you know, gambling too much, because they risk those things. So no, I wouldn't call it investing. But this risk tolerance is really looking at the things that you want to do. Some people really think that starting a business is risky. and they wouldn't touch it. And other people say, well, the risk level of that for my return on investment that I've looked into is worth it for me. And I'm ready to risk this amount to try this. And that, if it's within, the question is, have you thought about it? Have you reflected on it? Have you made sure you've got your food, your home, your bills paid? So again, I think part of also being coaches is a lot of people, will say, I'm going to follow my gut. My gut instinct is that I'm going to do this. And I say, let's follow your gut and let's do the numbers to make sure that your gut is in line with what you want. I think the two can coexist.
Totally. Totally. Thanks for sharing that. So you spoke about working with, you do work with businesses, right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I work with, women who are in business, who are trying to, grow their business, expand it, or try to make more money, profitability. Yeah. Okay.
And how do you find that in the sense of women keeping their business money separate from personal, not necessarily just personal, household finances?
Yeah, so I do deal with a lot of sole entrepreneurs. And the main thing is to absolutely understand that it's not a hobby, it's a business. Yeah. So if it's a business, we got to take it seriously. There has to be accounting for it. Mm-hmm. So the main thing is that there can be this gray area between, is this work or, is this my home money? So someone will say, oh, I bought this, but I'm not going to put it into the business, even though it's a business expense, because, I'm not doing so well. But actually, what we want to see is the real numbers that it costs to do that job and the real numbers that you are earning. So I very much am for separating. And that requires a bit of setup with the management. But you want to know that because you want to know, do you have a thriving business and not that you have an expensive hobby? So you have to do that review between, so your accounts need to be looked at.
And do you find that women are more reluctant or find it more difficult to price their services or products appropriately? Do you find that?
Yeah. I mean, there's many things psychologically that go into owning your business. It isn't just that you are really good at something, have a passion to do it. It's got to be looked at that, is it viable? What's the charge? How many hours? Will you make your income that you need? So there is some work that can be done before as well, before you go into it. But also, what someone should charge is equally important. A lot of people, a lot of women as well, because this is in our DNA. We want the village to do better, right? We want people to do better. So we very easily will say, I would do this for free. Okay. It comes, rolls off, right? I would do this for free. Or look, let me do it for you. And then whatever you can pay me. Or I feel like I'm charging too much. Things like that. This is just in our wanting everyone to do and thrive. Okay. But you have a business, so it needs to make money. So number one is that there is a calculation for what is your fee per hour. So you can work out, experience, time, how long things take, you can get an hourly rate and then look at it in the market and make sure that you're in line in the market. Are you above everybody else, below everybody else, in line? Look at the averages and decide where you're at. The other thing as well is that if you want to do something for free, you must always say your original going rate. So you can say, my rate is, £150 per hour, but I will do it for you at a discount for, 50% off, if that's what you want. Yeah. But when they tell their friends and the people that they know, they will tell your original rate. So that you're always clear that this is your original rate or charges, but you are doing it at a discount for them. And that it's a choice person by person. And the other is that you are doing a business, men do this much more easily. They are expected to earn income. You should be expecting of yourself to earn income. And you know, if everything's okay at home, great. You'll just put more money into savings and more money to kids and things like that. So, you know, you do have to kind of run your business like it's a proper structured business, looking at its profitability, being able to talk about money too. And if you are having difficulty talking about money, you can go and speak to coaches about that because that's really your mindset and your conversations with money. And you need to have that because you have to be able to confidently say to people, this is what I charge, as anybody would. Great. I don't know if you heard the Picasso story, you know, that he was in a cafe having a coffee and a lady, he was kind of doodling. And a lady said, oh, on a napkin. And a lady said, oh, may I have that? And he turned to her and he said, yes, it's 10,000 euro, whatever he said. And she said, what? You did that in. He did that in like having a coffee, having an espresso. And he said, no, I did that in all the
All the
years of
years.
training. I did that in all the sweat and tears for my passion. So this 2 minutes is 10,000. And I want people to remember that you aren't just the rate, you are what you have created to charge that rate. So it stands, it should stand.
That bit about stating your real rate hits home for me. So many of us, especially women working in the nonprofit sector, we forget that charging well is also part of sustainability. Thank you for that. You talk very confidently about that, and I want to throw it back on you to say, how long did it take you to come to that sort of level in your personal life, in your business, confidently sticking with your price or charging a fee that makes sense for the business?
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky in a sense that when I started off as an accountant, when I worked for myself, I was an accountant, and there was a going rate for accountants, and it was kind of known. So I almost didn't have to argue with it. So that was very easy work. I had my rate, everybody paid it. I was actually earning really well. It was great. When I became a financial coach, which is still a really emerging, in the last kind of 8, 10 years, let's say, you know, people don't really know the value of it and it's invaluable. I'm going to plug that. Financial coaching is invaluable, but they didn't really understand it. So a lot of the time I knew I could help and needed to help. They couldn't see the value of my hourly rate. So I would say, this is my hourly rate, but I will discount it. And then slowly, slowly, I mean, it still took like a year or 18 months of discounting for people to then be able to say around, no, go to Amanda. Like, it will be the best money you spend to go. So you have to then build a reputation. If you're doing something out of left field, there may be an investment in lowering your income to increase your reputation. But it's got to be a, like, I knew what my income was every month. Yeah, I knew what the business was doing. It was a choice to keep doing it, a choice to go forward. So that's what is really that mindfulness with money is being aware of what you're doing. I didn't guess anything. I knew what I was losing, what I was gaining. And I didn't wait for the end of a financial year. I was doing that on quite a monthly or quarterly basis.
So you were looking at your figures on a monthly or quarterly basis, which makes sense, which is another thing most women fall short on, because people don't want to look at their numbers. They're like, oh, I'm too scared. Oh, no, I don't want to do that. And it's in looking at the numbers that you know what's going on, what action needs to be taken.
Yeah, to speak to that, I kind of I say to people a lot, living with money in the world is like driving a car. So your hands are on the wheel when you drive. Okay, take your hands off the wheel of a moving car. Where does it go? Into a ditch, into an accident. You know, it goes off course, correct? So you always have to keep your hands on the wheel. And that hands on the wheel is being conscious of your money, which means looking at your numbers. monthly, quarterly, half yearly. Now, the thing about the hands on the wheel and the driving also is that if you look at it monthly, you can course correct your journey a little bit. Yeah. If you look at it yearly, you are having to course correct 12 months of ignoring something. Mm-hmm. If you look at it half yearly, you're going to course correct 6 months. You would not go on a road without a destination, without something in your GPS, and then every 6 months come up for air and say, am I on the way I'm supposed to be going? Yeah. It's got to be a constant driving destination, you know, using your motivation and, you know, money conversations to know where you're going.
Would you say it's important to have an end goal?
Oh, yeah.
When thinking about your money or a plan of what exactly it is you want to do or why you're putting the money aside or what you want to achieve. Would you say that's an important element to things?
I'm going to say it's like on the top of the list to do when you're doing a business. But even for your home money, yeah, you need a financial destination. You need to plug in that address in your GPS that you're going to drive to. And it's important also because to have a real number, to have a real goal, because what will happen is things will try to stop you when you're going somewhere. This looks nice and stop here and spend money going to the theater and you're going to a wedding and I don't want to wear that dress that I have in the wardrobe. I want to wear. And if you don't have your goal, if you don't have your financial goal for the year or the 2 years or 5 years, it's very hard for your motivation to keep going. So what you need is motivation and determination working at the same time, right? So if I have a number that I'm going for, I'm motivated to go there. When something comes to distract me, I can pull up my determination to keep going where I'm going. And I can keep it up in myself to say, nope, that dress is a one-off. It doesn't make sense until I meet my goal. When I've met my goal, I can do what I want. Go for the goal. And that's motivation and determination. But if you have the number, you will get there because you will promise yourself. And by visualizing it and doing your accountability and things like that, you'll get there.
Fantastic. I totally agree with you because I think that knowing where you're going is the starting point of everything. What is it you're wanting to achieve? Where do you want to be in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, whatever number of years?
Yeah.
And then, like you say, over the time, you keep looking at things.
And also that it can change. Sorry, you'd mentioned that and you're right in that I can have a plan for 2 years or 5 years and it can completely change. You know, you could be planning to live in one country, you know, fall in love with somebody. It's unbelievable and change country. And then your whole financial plan changes. Yeah. No one is saying that those things are set in stone, but they must be set for that aim of your, for your motivation and determination. And then the flexibility of mind to say, and it's changed and I'm going to go this way and then reset your destination.
Yeah, that's right. You have some people who will say money is not important. What do you say to that?
I go back to it's important until it isn't. I think that the people who say money isn't important, then maybe, you know, money is very complex and you don't know what someone's money story or journey is until you're on the inside of their life. And it's very easy from the outside to look away that you may not be. So I say to people a lot of the time, you have to really row your own boat, like live your own life, decide where you're going. And if money is important to you right now, it's important. And if it isn't important to that person, then it isn't important. It's got nothing to do with you. It's to do with your life. So yeah, I question again, it's complex. People say things sometimes, you know, to make them sound better than they could be, you know, and you don't know. And because you don't know, I think you have to kind of take everything with a, well, is it important to me? It is right now because I need this financial goal met and I need that done, and then I will relax and it will be less important. So yeah, it's important to you if it is.
You mentioned money stories there. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, everyone has a money narrative, and unfortunately or fortunately, it depends your childhood, about 80% of that is made in your childhood. Mm-hmm. So you have to see the money narrative of your parents, you know, if your grandparents lived around you, aunties or uncles, some of their beliefs about money could go into your kind of mind, which as an adult, we have to ask ourselves sometimes, is that true? So for example, someone might have, my granny was a bit like that, you know, so if she saw someone driving a very fancy car, mm-hmm. she would say like, oh, I wonder how this one made that money, you know? And there was this kind of very big subtext, which was they must have made it a bad way. If they're rich, there is something a little bit wrong with them, right? They made it a little bit crafty or dodgy. Now, that isn't true. There are very good people making good money and doing good things with their money. So if your internal belief system is that rich people are a bit dodgy, when you get money, you might be trying to get rid of it as quickly as possible. You might be quite ashamed to be getting money. You know, you might be feel bad every time you make too much money. So all this belief system and your money stories and your money narratives really does have to be looked at. If your life, if you're not happy with your money situation, you know, some people can go through life never even observing themselves over money. You know, parents were secure, they are secure, you know, they go forward, they hand it over to their children. There's nothing in the middle. But I think if you see the debt in the world at the moment, if you see the level of stress in the world at the moment, I'm going to say that there is a lot of money narrative that could be looked at, and really somebody could be helped to look at whether that is serving them still in the right way. So those money stories are very important to our beliefs and how we're dealing with money now on the day to day.
Indeed, indeed. And they're very real. And sometimes you're not even aware that you carry them. Oh. I shared with you a story. And when I was growing up, my mom would always say, you know, in Yoruba, and, you know, I think when you translate some of these things, they don't carry as much weight and whatever, but I'm going to translate it anyway. And it's her prayer was, may you never have cause to sell your things. And I've grown up and I have all this stuff in the house, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe I should sell it. Now there's a culture of selling things on eBay and all these sites. And for years, I'm like, okay, I want to sell this. I just find that I haven't sold them, and I just can't get myself to do it. And it struck me one day that it's probably to do with that prayer, because I've somehow interpreted the prayer to mean it's a bad thing to sell your things. Mm-hmm. Whereas she's probably praying that I don't have the need to sell those things.
Yes. You know,
I went as far as setting up an eBay account, and for months I just could not bring myself to list things. And I'll very happily give the things away to charity. And some of these things are new things that I haven't used. You know, so I'm like, ah, that's what it's about. So you really do need to look deep to find some of those money stories, you know.
And then also, you know, aside from these ones that you can carry, which you don't even realize that you carry sometimes, you know, and they can have a real effect on your life, on your bank balance, in a sense, those narratives. But also to add in that each person has a narrative now. So imagine getting married to, or having a partner. And when you're having money conversations with them, you're having money conversations with their narrative. So a lot of people say, you know, I don't know why, but whenever we get down to sit down about money, we fight. Yeah. Or whenever we start this conversation, I don't know where he comes out with this stuff. Mm-hmm. Because you're dealing with a narrative. So sometimes if with curiosity and interest, you can say to them, okay, but is that true? For example, you're spending money here, there, and everywhere. You know, is that true? Or is that a belief that all women spend money, for example? So things like that, I really am, turn on all the lights in the house, look at the reality of where you are, what you're doing, how you're behaving. Only good can come at looking and doing some reality checks as an adult, you know, some adult to adult conversation. Only good comes from that.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah. And so
we could talk forever.
We can. I want to ask you this, actually. What's one word you'd use to describe money?
I mean, my one word is money is useful. It's useful. So if it's a useful thing, I want to use it well, if that makes sense. So yeah, for me, money is useful.
That's good. That's good. Because my first thought is always money is a tool.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is basically what you've just said, using another word.
Useful, yeah.
Yeah, it's useful. And one of the things, though, is you have people who have the money and don't use it on themselves. In the sense that they've saved the money, they've put money as they've invested and all of that, and the need to spend on themselves arise and they're just not going to spend the money.
Like another narrative, another money story, as if to say they'll never be enough.
Yeah.
Or exactly. They could be, they're afraid, what if something happens? And and I do think that, you know, part of that word tool or usefulness as well is that you have to enjoy it too. You know, it's so hard to work for that money. It should be hard to spend it so that you find what's important to you and your value systems, but that you must enjoy parts of it, you know. Otherwise, you will get, I mean, it's just as much as having little and having, you know, kind of like a very limiting mindset, you know, that you're always worried about it. Again, that's kind of closing in the thoughts about money. So that would need to be looked at, definitely, if someone is not living well with money and they're financially secure enough to do so.
If you've done all the work and you've made all the right decisions to put things in place, part of that really, and what I generally talk to women about it, and even the young ones now, is when you're planning for whatever it is you want to plan for, it's not about just rigidly, oh, I want to save. It's about also allowing yourself allowance along the way to have a bit of fun. You know, we've heard stories of people who put money aside and never live to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So while you're on the journey of putting things in place, but also enjoy some of it as well.
Yeah, you know? I think any extreme in anything you do as a human being is not balanced, is the truth. So, you know, famine and feast, either side is not good. Overindulging and feasting too much leads to its own set of issues, as does famine. So we're always looking for a balance in the middle. You know, am I addressing my needs? Am I addressing my wants? Am I going for what I need to go for? And it's kind of living with it, you know, in with all the good intention, but to keep always balanced, you know. So I say to people, have an emergency fund, right? One of the things, if you want to be financially stable, have an emergency fund, 3 to 6 months of expenses. And I say to people, but this isn't a party fund. You know, this is an emergency fund. So, you know, it's got to be taken seriously and looked at, like, anything should happen. I've got 3 or 6 months, depends what your financial situation is, that I can go into if I lose a job or something happens. But then I say, but once you've met that, then there's room. But if you focus on it, that's your motivation. And then after that, okay, then the next lump sum that you would have put in there, I'm going to have a party. I'm going to go for dinner. I'm going to go for vacation. So you can reward yourself when you've met your goals. And if you make your goals in steps that are achievable, then you can get there quite quickly.
So I generally ask 4 questions of all my guests. I think you've answered the first one, but I'll ask it again in case I've got in the wrong end of the stick. The first one is, what experience has shaped your relationship with money the most?
I mean, I definitely think my dad's incident did, but I think that experience really taught me to be very, like, to teach me a growth mindset as well. And also this mindset that you can have things and you can lose them. So it's what you do to make sure that you stay balanced and focused and stable. So I think that really did shape me.
When I'm working with the young ones I work with, I talk about, you know, because these days they have access to a lot of money, right? In the sense that they get online, TikTok, and do all these things, and are able to generate money a lot younger than we used to be able to. And I talk to them about, you know, put some money aside, because money is there today. Life is about peaks and troughs. And the money is there today. It may not always be there. So put some aside so that in those times when things are not as buoyant as they are now, you have something to fall back on. And
But the humans are the worst species, I think, well, it's only us anyway, that can think long term and the good and bad. Like, it's very difficult for people to, you know, when things are good, you think they're going to be great forever. And, you know, if you say, look, watch out if this should happen, oh man, you're killing my vibe, you know, what are you talking about? And you're like, no, what will kill your vibe is if you can't eat when something goes wrong. So just keep a balance.
So the next question: what's a book or quote that's changed the way you see life or money?
I mean, I have read, I don't know, about 30 self-finance books in my lifetime. They all have something to say and they all gave good lessons. But I think the most important thing is really, there's no real quote, it's to listen to people talk about money. Like, listen to what's going on around you and listen to those money conversations. And get curious and ask questions about it. You've got to be interested in this subject. There is no book which will teach you everything. So you've got to go to different sources, people, books, podcasts, lectures, you know, get it from everywhere and find your own information that you can kind of digest and put into practice. You know, find your own way of getting that information.
Yeah, fabulous. Thank you. I agree with you there. So where you talk about looking at various sources and then implementing what applies to you, because money is personal, you know, it's very personal, and everybody, you have different priorities, you have different objectives, different plans, different goals. And like you rightly said, no one book can actually teach you everything. And even if it teaches everything, it doesn't actually teach what you personally.
Can't absorb it all. I mean, it depends the language. So, and how it's delivered to you and your brain. So I think, get ready. If you want to be good with money, you've got to really start looking in all angles of it. And if you're just interested and curious, you can let that get you quite far.
Okay. And if you were to speak to yourself 5 years ago, what would you say?
Where was I 5 years ago? I would say, good job, keep going.
Okay.
I was in a good, you know, I've been in a good place, but I want to say, you know, when I was 28, I was not in a good place. And now I'm 50 now, I'm in a really good place. But it didn't happen overnight. It takes work and focus and making plans and sticking to them and saying no to things so that I can say yes to other things later. There is no get rich quick. Everything is an investment in time and energy, and also sitting with things that can be very boring sometimes, you know, but that I have persisted and persisted. So 28 looks very different from now. If someone is 28 now and they switch themselves on, I mean, from 28 to now, I would say from 28 to 30 in 2 years, I almost turned everything completely around. It took 2 years to be going in the right direction. So you can change anything anytime, but it really will mean that you've got to invest that time and energy and focus.
So I agree with you. What I would add to that would be, and it's okay to fall off track. You know, it's just about staying conscious and curious. You realize you're falling off track, get right back up and get going again.
No, 100% agree. And I say a lot of times to people, like, no shame, no blame, just start from today. So a lot of people say, look, I don't know how I arrived where I am today. Okay, well, you did. It's okay. Now you got to let all that shame go, because that's blocking you from letting the learning in. So finish the shame, finish the blame, bury it. Okay, let it go and start learning and go in the direction you want to go. Anyone can do that if you decide.
That reminder to start from today really resonates with me, because it's something I often tell clients too. The past can teach you, but it doesn't have to trap you, is what I say. So, this is my final of the four questions. What does a rich life mean to you right now?
So, a rich life for me is freedom from mental worry about money. That is really rich. Freedom to choose is rich to me. So, if I have enough money where I'm not worrying, I'm rich. If I have enough money where I can choose if I eat there or there, or if I take a holiday there or there, I'm rich. You know, I there is no Lamborghini yacht. I don't really care about that. Mine is freedom to choose and freedom from worry. And if you are that, very simply to me, you're rich.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
And thank you. I finished your book. It was wonderful. Yeah, I read your Life's Riches.
Oh, that one. Okay. Yes. Tell me about it. What did you think?
Yeah, I really liked it. It was so lovely. Also, like, you know, hearing your stories. I think you were so honest and, you know, in an effort to share with us, you know, what you have gone through, and then, you know, the learnings and the way that it was all kind of laid out with the, you know, the kind of the mantra at the end, which you can say to yourself, great, really good. A really good book to see somebody that has taken a journey with money, and that you can see that, you know, you're like everybody, you know, we're all done things like that. So it was very, very, it was good to acknowledge that it's a life with money. It was great. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you. I did not think about talking about the book at all. So thank you so much for bringing it up.
Of course.
Thank you. So was there one story perhaps that that stood out for you?
I think when you were talking about when you started work and that you had to kind of reevaluate, I just felt like, you know, it's like hearing even people who know how to do things will still have moments, because the reality is that you just don't know what life's going to give you. You know, when you had decided about the moving and then about the investments and then you taking time. But it was really good because you were able to give a lesson for each point, which that kind of self-reflection, you know, we know this, many, many people aren't able to do. So part of that is really, that is money coaching, you know, that is financial coaching. It's coming to let your, hear yourself think, hear where you've been, why you got there, and then where do you want to go? And that was really the foundation of that book, is what I read. It was great.
Thank you. Thank you so much for saying that. So do you want to talk a bit about what you do, you know, your coaching services and how you help people?
Yeah, so I have a website, Tidy My Money, because I'm hoping people will tidy up their situation, their money situation. So I do one-on-one coaching. I also speak to groups as well. I've done some corporate training as well to teach people what is financial stability, because as we know, it's not always the amount of money that you have coming in. It's really how you're living with money and your mindset around it. And so sometimes I'm kind of sharing things that people have know but don't think of, or sometimes, don't know that they didn't know it either. So really kind of giving some information like that. And then, yeah, I work with people to kind of get them, let them decide out loud what it is they want to go for it. And then there is a kind of coach to be accountable that are they doing what they said they would do in a supportive way. And I obviously love what I do, and I love helping people turn their lives around and find that security and freedom. Yeah, that's me.
Thank you. Thank you. So, yeah, I'll leave a link to your website in the show notes.
It's been a great conversation. Thank you.
It has been. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your work with us today. Hopefully, people will walk away from this and would have taken at least one thing about money.
Thank
Yeah,
you.
thank you. Listening back, I was struck by how calm and steady Amanda's relationship with money feels. Not from having it all figured out, but from deciding that stability is worth tending to. It reminded me that richness isn't always loud or fast. Sometimes it's the quiet confidence of knowing your foundations are strong. That's a richness I think many of us are still learning to claim. Thank you so much for listening to Life's Riches. If this episode resonated, share it with a friend who's building stability or finding their financial calm. And don't forget to follow the podcast wherever you listen. It really helps others discover these stories. You will find the link to Amanda's work in the show notes. Until next time, take care and keep defining what a rich life means to you.